Part 3, Dictatorship in Disguise.
The United States Constitution, according to the preamble, is intended to provide for justice, domestic tranquility, our common defense and general welfare, and to secure the blessings of liberty not only to ourselves, but to our posterity. These were the goals that shaped our Constitution, and this is the Constitution that enabled America to become a great nation of free people. But soon, you and I will be encouraged to scrap our beloved Constitution and accept instead a new Constitution which has been written without the knowledge, much less the approval, of most Americans. The new Constitution has a preamble too, but it mentions not one of the objectives of our present Constitution. Instead of justice and domestic tranquility, the new Constitution seeks only, quote, good order, unquote, without defining what that means. The very first words are, quote, so that we may join in common endeavors, unquote. And the body of the new Constitution makes it clear that this means an end to individual endeavors. The new Constitution is expressly stated to be good only for a prescribed period of 25 years. Our posterity are left to fend for themselves. No reference is made in the preamble to our defense or general welfare. Worst of all, the matter of liberty, so central to our present Constitution, is totally ignored in the preamble of the new one, which seeks only, quote, an adequate and self-repairing government, unquote. The emphasis throughout the new Constitution is on the government, not on the people. Adequate turns out to mean too powerful to be challenged, and self-repairing means that the laws and governmental structure can be virtually changed and shifted to permit anything our rulers wish to do. Before I explore some of the details of the secret new Constitution, let me give you a bird's eye view. Article 1 is divided into two parts, defining rights and responsibilities. It turns out that some of our present rights disappear outright, and practically all of the rest become conditioned and fragile, able to be terminated on the whim of the government. The responsibilities, however, which are obligations of the citizen to the government, are absolute and unconditional. Article 2 defines what are called the new states. The 50 states we have now cease to have any legal or political meaning at all. The terms of the new Constitution would theoretically allow up to a maximum of 20 of these new states. But according to my confidential information, the actual number planned is 10. It is no accident, my friends, that our federal government for the past several years has managed its outlying activities through the 10 federal regions. Under our present Constitution, the federal government derives its powers from the states, which retain all powers not specifically given to the federal government. But under the dynasty's secret new Constitution, exactly the opposite is the case. The new states are completely subservient to the federal government and creatures of it. Articles 3 through 8 of the new Constitution define the independent branches of government and their powers and duties. Right now, as you know, under our present Constitution, the federal government is divided into three co-equal branches, the executive, legislative, and judicial. They were carefully set up according to a system of checks and balances in order to protect our freedom from arbitrary government. But under the new Constitution, there would not be three but six branches, so structured that our present system of checks and balances are totally destroyed. The counterparts of our present three branches would be greatly changed and would be joined by the regulatory branch to control business, a planning branch to plan our nation's economy, and an electoral branch to oversee, monitor, finance, and regulate all elections throughout the country. All three of these proposed new branches are foreshadowed by recent and proposed governmental developments right now. Articles 9 and 10 discuss a variety of general provisions. Article 11 provides new procedures for constitutional amendments which are totally different from and more dangerous than those which now exist. Finally, Article 12 provides for transition from my present representative government to the new, cleverly disguised dictatorship under the new Constitution. The secret new Constitution is about 8,000 to 9,000 words in length. Being the product of 10 years' work, the contributions of over 100 people, millions of dollars, and 40 drafts, every word has been chosen carefully and for a purpose. It is therefore very revealing to read it in detail, and I suggest that you obtain it and do so if you have the opportunity. But in the meantime, I want to open your eyes to its basic nature and provisions. First, consider the matter of individual citizens' rights. One right which is under powerful attack right now, and which disappears in the new Constitution, is the right to bear arms. Instead, and I quote, "the bearing of arms or the possession of lethal weapons shall be confined to the police, members of the armed forces, and those licensed under law," unquote. Regardless of what you may think about the ins and outs of the controversial gun control issue, you should be aware of the historical fact that disarming of the populace is always a part of any totalitarian scheme. Another right which disappears is that of the trial by jury. Instead, as defined in Article 8 of the judicial branch, a presiding judge may decide whether a trial is to be of the investigatory or adversary type. An investigatory trial is a type used, for example, in the Soviet Union. You are presumed guilty and must prove your innocence before a panel of judges. If an adversary trial is chosen, the judge is to decide whether there is to be a jury and how many jurors there shall be. There's no provision to prevent your jury, if any, from being a jury of one, who, as easily as not, would be your bitter enemy, or possibly could be. As for how you might wind up in court in the first place, the section on rights provides that, quote, "searches and seizures shall be made only on judicial warrant," unquote. That sounds reassuring until you discover that nowhere in the new Constitution are there any criteria given for the issuance of a judicial warrant. In other words, it could be completely arbitrary. The practice of religion is said to be privileged, but my friends, that's not the same as freedom of religion legally. A right is something which cannot be revoked. A privilege, however, is something to hold only at the pleasure of the government, which can be revoked at will. Or consider the matter of property rights. It says, quote, no property shall be taken without compensation, unquote. But it doesn't say just compensation. The omission of that little word, just, after 40 drafts, cannot be accidental. And it would leave the government to seize your house, give you $1, and say, we gave you compensation. Finally, while this does not exhaust the discussion that could be given of the weakening of individual rights, the preoccupation with declared emergency is prominent with respect to rights. In Article 6 of the new Constitution, the reason and procedures for declaration of emergency are prescribed. Among other things, it says that emergency can be declared for no better reason than, quote, if an extraordinary advantage be anticipated, unquote. It doesn't say advantage to whom, but obviously it means advantage to the government. With this in mind, observe that Article 1 of their Constitution says that freedom of expression, of communication, of movement, of assembly, and of petition are abridged in declared emergency. Peaceful public gatherings to discuss public issues may also be interrupted or denied. Writs of habeas corpus are also suppressed in declared emergency, which means you could be locked up and held indefinitely without the preferring of any charges. With respect to the so-called responsibilities defined in their new Constitution, the potential dangers tend to be more subtle. I will only mention one example here, quote, each citizen shall participate in the processes of democracy, assisting in the selection of officials and in the monitoring of their conduct in office, unquote. Several points even in this one sentence would permit comment, but simply consider the word shall. This, my friends, is a command. You shall participate. Not that you have the discretion to participate, and if you do not do so, you would therefore be violating the most basic law of the land, the Constitution. For comparison, you are probably aware that, for example, in the Soviet Union, practically every citizen eligible to vote does, even though there is only one candidate for each office. He is quite aware that failure to participate in the Kremlin's brand of democracy would be dangerous as well as futile. Turning now to the new states, the basic observation to be made is that they are simply puppets of the federal government. Let me just cite one very interesting provision here. Quote, if governments of the new states fail to carry out fully their constitutional duties, their officials shall be warned and may be required by the Senate on the recommendation of the watchkeeper to forfeit revenues from the new states of America, unquote. You have no doubt already heard of various cases in which certain localities have been forced to forfeit the revenue-sharing funds because of failure to comply with federal guidelines, so-called. The provision I have just read you from the secret new Constitution is what this is leading up to. Turning now to the six branches of government under the new Constitution, consider first the counterpart of our executive branch, which is in the new Constitution. It's simply called the Presidency in Article 5. This is entirely appropriate, since under the secret new Rockefeller Constitution, the President is a, quote, strong man, able to call all the shots. He is to serve for a single term of 9 years. You may have noticed the single term idea popping up lately, and even the 9-year length has been suggested by some in print and speech. The secret new Constitution is where the idea came from. There are also two vice presidents, one designated for general affairs, first in line of presidential succession in case of disability, the other designated for internal affairs, and second in line. There are detailed provisions for presidential and vice presidential disability, with appointments playing a key role, as in our present 25th Amendment, which was engineered by Nelson Rockefeller. A provision which exemplifies the power of the President is, quote, "Treaties or agreements with other nations negotiated under the President's authority shall be in effect unless objected to by a majority of the Senate within 90 days, unquote. Here is a pattern which permeates the new Constitution, wherein all sorts of actions take effect unless objected to by a majority instead of resulting from positive approval by a majority. This even applies in the matter of constitutional amendment, in which amendments generated by the judicial branch takes effect unless turned down by a majority of the people. Under the presidency, there is also to be an ominous new official called the intendant, whose powers are potentially those of the commander of a nationwide Gestapo. The actual wording, of course, sounds relatively mild to the unwary. The danger lies in what is not said and the limits that are not imposed. He is to supervise offices for intelligence and investigation, as well as an office of emergency organization. His role here reflects a preoccupation with emergency that crops up again and again throughout the new Constitution. The word emergency appears 13 times in the new Constitution. It does not even appear once in our present Constitution. Constitutional provisions for declaration of emergency, of course, have been used time after time in recent years to terminate freedom in other countries. The intendant is also given the authority to charter tax-exempt foundations or corporations that are, quote, "determined by him to be for useful public purposes," unquote. There is no check whatsoever on his authority to do this. This only reflects the unbridled authority of the President himself under the new Constitution, however. In an interview of Rexford Tugwell that was published with the preliminary version of his group's suggested new Constitution, he was asked how his Constitution provided for accountability of an unscrupulous President. His answer was startling and blunt, quote, "It doesn't," unquote. The new Constitution gives the President all the tools he needs to establish unchallenged authority during the transition period from our present to the new Constitution as described in Article 12, and I quote, "The President is authorized to assume such powers, make such appointments, and use such funds as are necessary to make this Constitution effective as soon as possible after acceptance by a referendum he may initiate," unquote. This open invitation for him to assume any and all powers he deems appropriate speaks for itself. Furthermore, with respect to the replacement of present governmental functions by those defined by the new Constitution, and I quote, "The President shall determine when replacement is complete," unquote. Since only the President is given this power, there is really nothing to prevent him from simply freezing the process partway through. For example, after abolishing our present Congress and before appointing the new one, it is very possible that these two very short passages are the real crux of their secret new Constitution. But just to round out the President guarantees of invulnerability, the framers of the Rockefeller dynasty's new constitution also contains a remarkable license to lie in Article 9, and I quote as follows: "The President, the Vice Presidents, and members of the legislative houses shall in all cases except treason, felony, and breach of the peace be exempt from penalty for anything they may say while pursuing public duties," unquote. Of the three exceptions noted, treason is of no force or effect since it is defined nowhere in the new Constitution. Given the power of the President under the new Constitution, the rest would really have only whatever status the President allowed it to have. For your information, however, the legislative branch would consist of a Senate and House of Representatives as now, but there the similarities end. Senators would no longer be elected at all. Instead, they would be hand-picked appointees of the President, plus former presidents and vice presidents, and would serve for life. The House of Representatives would have 400 members, but there would be only 100 congressional districts. Each district would elect 3 representatives who would serve for 3-year terms. These would be expected to compete with one another instead of speaking with one voice, so this device would effectively undermine local representation at the national level. There would also be 100 representatives elected at large from the nation as a whole instead of individual districts. The at-large members would form the backbone of what little power is left to the House. They would serve for 9-year terms and would be the only ones eligible to become committee chairman. The judicial branch would be presided over by a principal justice, chosen by the President's hand-picked Senate. He would be a judicial czar, controlling the entire judicial system of the nation with the aid of a judicial council and judicial assembly. The judicial council would be the originator of all constitutional amendments and would have the duty to consider amending the Constitution to legalize unconstitutional steps taken by the government from time to time, as provided in Section 13D of Article 8. The new regulatory branch is foreshadowed by many current developments. The July 1975 Reader's Digest even carries an article entitled, quote, "Our Rottening Fourth Branch," which discusses the nation's regulatory structure as if it already were an independent branch of government. The most notable feature of the regulatory branch, aside from its grip on the nation's enterprises generally, is the blessing given to cartel arrangements called authorities. It says, quote, "Member enterprises of an authority shall be exempt from other regulation," unquote. But as for the little guys who do come under the government's regulation, it says, quote, "Non-members shall be required to maintain the same standards as those prescribed for members," unquote. The standards prescribed would be those agreed upon by the cartel members, and non-members would not be allowed even to exceed those standards if they wanted to for competitive reasons. The planning branch is foreshadowed by the increasing clamor for economic planning by the present domestic council run by Nelson Rockefeller, by the national land use planning legislation, which the Rockefeller interests are trying to push through Congress over the bitter opposition of vast numbers of alert citizens, and so forth. It would consist of a 15-member board appointed by the President. They would prepare 6- and 12-year plans and budgets to reflect the desires of the President, who would submit the budgets to the House of Representatives for their rubber stamp approval each year. Finally, The electoral branch is also on its way piecemeal through public financing of election campaigns, quota systems, and now the newly operational Federal Election Commission. Under the new Constitution, there is to be an electoral overseer in charge of the electoral branch chosen by the President's hand-picked Senate, and he is to, quote, supervise the organization of national and district parties, arrange for discussion among them, and provide for the nomination and election of candidates for public office, unquote. All electoral processes are to be paid for out of tax money, and no party can run candidates if it is not reorganized by the overseer. There are quota systems for apportionment of public funds that clearly would help drive out small parties and tend ultimately toward a one-party system. Furthermore, the overseer is to monitor, supervise, and regulate the election process completely. All the power necessary to convert elections into a meaningless exercise is provided by the electoral branch under the secret new Constitution. My friends, to sum it all up, I can only observe that the secret new Constitution of the Rockefeller dynasty turns out, in the final analysis, not to be new at all. It's actually a prescription for the oldest kind of government of all, one-man rule. It is this slippage backward into the bad old days of the past that we have seen increasingly during our lifetimes, brought about by increasingly ignoring our Constitution, which is still the newest idea in government. If we will stop allowing ourselves to be dragged down and pulled backward by the crafty manipulations of the Rockefeller dynasty and those who work with them, we can indeed solve the problems that increasingly beset us. So the question is, are we going to celebrate our 200th anniversary in 1976 as the rebirth of our nation or as the death of our free republic? The American Constitution of 1787 was the product of distilling the experience of 5,000 years of civilization. Less than 200 years old, it is still practically brand new, especially since we haven't used it much lately. If God will grant us the option of doing so at this late hour, there is truly a new start we can make with full confidence in the results. That new start, my friends, is to pick up our present unique Constitution and start using it again. It would be the first time in your lifetime or mine that this was really done. And I am convinced we would all be pleasantly astonished at the results. This is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and God bless each and every one of you.